Moro Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Hi, this is Brian Ward.
And Dr. Andrea Letamendi from the Arkham Sessions.
And you are listening to
the GeekCast Radio Network.
Thanks for tuning in to Your Remote Control here on the GeekCast Radio Network. I'm your announcer, Optimus Solo. And on today's episode, join TFG1 Mike and the rest of the RC crew as they talk TV in the modern era. That's right, for TV talk all the time, stop channel surfing and let us take over your remote control.
Everything's okay, man. You're at Star Labs.
Star Labs, who are you?
I'm Cisco Ramon, she's Caitlin, Dr. Snow.
I need you to urinate in this.
Not this second.
Wait, what is happening? What is going on?
You were struck by lightning, dude.
Lightning gave me abs.
Hello and welcome to Remote Control. This is episode 43, continuing on in our Summer of Superheroes here on Remote Control from the GeekCast Radio Network. I'm, of course, TFG1 Mike. Joining me is my counterpart, trying to be DJV from Simplistic Reviews. Hello, sir.
My name is DJ Valentine, and I'm the silliest podcaster alive. Hi, how you doing?
Hi, how you doing? Yeah, for a second there, I was going to have to threaten you with sending Howard after you if you didn't get on this episode. And I don't mean the good Howard either. I mean the bad Howard.
Always the bad Howard. Always the bad
Howard. Oh, God. We are continuing on here, as I said. This week, we've got The Flash Season 1 and Arrow Season 3. Basically, Arrow Season 3 is, fuck Arrow, I'm Batman. it's essentially what it is.
This is when there's blatant. This is when it was blatantly, I'm Batman.
Oh, yeah. originally, we were going to do it the opposite way. Arrow Season 3, Flash Season 1. And then I remembered, Flash is on Tuesdays. Which means that whatever crossover they started doing once they premiered Flash in 2014... the first episode would be on a Tuesday because Arrow was on a Wednesday. And this last season, it was like Supergirl was on Monday, Flash was still on Tuesday, but Arrow was on Thursday. And I'm like, what the hell kind of stupid crap is that?
You got to make room for the 100 or whatever the hell show they have out on CW.
No.
That's not in the DCU EU.
I think Stupid Unnatural and... River Fail Wednesdays.
And where's Jane the Virgin and the rest of them?
I think that's on Mondays before Supergirl, or at least it was at the first moment of time, but I don't know. So Flash Season 1, right before I realized this whole crossover thing, I'm like, I got to the 8th episode of Season 3 of Arrow, which is the second half of the crossover. And I'm like, ooh, wait, I need to go back. So I basically stopped Arrow and I watched the first 17 out of 23 episodes of Flash immediately because Flash is so much easier to watch than Arrow was in the beginning. I mean, I know Flash does get darker at times as we will be going along. However, that first season, oh my God, it was a breath of fresh air.
It's very a creature of the week, but it's like fun creature of the week. It's like, okay, and it comes to the Flash, there have been two castings, the DC Universe, whatever you want to call it, mm-hmm. that I was vehemently against, that I had to eat my head on because I was wrong. One is Gal Gadot. I'm legally obligated to always say I was wrong about Gal Gadot, the one bright light of the films. And the other on the TV side is Grant Gustin. Because going in, I've had many arguments with my friends when this before, when they announced, you know, Grant Gustin's going to be Barry Allen. And I was like... maybe, and this probably was because he was on Glee, because that's the only thing I think he had as a major credit, and I'm not a huge, you know, sing-along TV show fan. But during the backdoor pilot episode on Arrow, I still wasn't convinced. But this show, especially from the first episode, and as it's gone on, Grant Gustin has proved me wrong over and over and over again, and he's essentially the best live-action Barry Allen, arguably. Some people... were pissed even more so about
Ezra Miller.
Well, I remember when Justice League was, they were going to do the Justice League thing, and they were saying, oh, we're going to make the TV separate from the movies, mm-hmm. and they were like, well, we want Stephen Amell Green Arrow, but at least they could say, well, Green Arrow is not a part of the team. Flash is a part of the team,
yeah.
and everybody wanted Grant Gustin to be that, and at least if you're going to use Ezra Miller, you could have used a different Flash, like a Wally West, mm-hmm. or whatever, Jay Garrick, whatever. But everybody, I don't know many who go Ezra over Grant. I don't know many.
Hell, I haven't even seen Justice League yet. I have not. I'm so far behind on films. Like, I saw Infinity War before I saw. I haven't even seen Black Panther yet. I haven't seen whatever came before Infinity War. Those first like Doctor Strange, Black Panther, and there was one other film
probably Thor Ragnarok. I'm assuming.
Yep, that's it. Those three: Doctor Strange, Thor Ragnarok, and Black Panther. I have not seen any of those. And I was still able to follow along with Avengers Infinity War. I have not... past the BS that was BVS, I have not seen any DC films right
Wonder
now.
Wonder Woman's worth your time. Wonder Woman's worth your time.
Yes, I understand that, and I'm willing to go into that. And I do want to see all these things eventually, but like, I'm more interested in DC TV than I am in the crappy movies that they have. I'm sorry, I'll say this right now. I do not care. I fully believe this. Batman and Robin had a better plot throughout the movie than the BS that was BVS.
You're not going to hear me argue. If you're looking for an argument, you're not going to get one from me. We did the ultimate cut commentary on Simplistic Reviews on God. The BVS, and it almost killed us, goddammit. Almost killed us.
Martha is the safe word.
You don't want to go down that road, but no, I mean, I guess the larger point is that it's funny how Stephen Amell and Grant Gustin have essentially embodied these characters, one being a fringe character, and one now have two iterations of the same character, mm-hmm. better than the movies. It's this idea I would have never thought. And like I said, I was against Grant Gustin because I didn't know who the hell I was like, Barry Allen? No, this isn't Barry Allen. I just don't see it. And probably around the midway point of the pilot episode, even again, when he's yelling at Harrison Wells and the team about the which I was like, that's very Barry Allen of him, where he's like, nobody listens to him, nobody's believing him, and he's like, you know what, I'll do it my damn self, f all this.
Yeah.
Screw all this, I'm out. I was like, that's Barry Allen. He's not gonna just sit by, he's gonna do the right thing. And I mean, I think Chris Evans kind of nailed that with Captain America, where, you know, he's gonna do the right thing. He's very just.
Absolutely.
It may be against, you know, what people were keep pushing him to go this way, but throughout this series, Barry essentially does not have that modus operandi. He's a very, you know, unselfish, I'm gonna do what's best to save everyone, I'm not gonna give up sort of person. And I like it. I think Grant Gustin nailed that.
So you mentioned this, and I knew of this, but I didn't actually see any of it. You mentioned Grant comes from Glee. Like you, I was not a Gleek. The last time I heard the name Gleek was, you know, the Wonder Twins, Activate. Like, that's the last time I knew of what a hell a Gleek was.
Oh,
so, like, I knew of Glee. I had zero interest because I'm not really that much into musicals, .. I don't really care. However, as these shows have gone along and Barry has sung several times, he actually sings in the first season here, which I will play later in this podcast, because Caitlin's just like, huh? Like, we'll talk about that. Yeah, yeah, exactly. She has a Shaggy Scooby moment. We'll talk about that a little bit later. But after, I think, the first or second season of Flash, and after I saw him sing on the show, I'm like, okay, well, you know, I don't really care about Glee. I don't care about the show, but I like his voice. I like the fact that, hey, it's the Flash singing. I went and I found the Smooth Criminal song from Glee.
Oh, Michael Jackson? No.
Yeah, no, I'm telling you, they kill it. Yes, I know it's a Michael Jackson song. Yes, I know no one should be touching the King of Pop.
Sacrilege.
I said no one should be touching the King of Pop. But see, here's the thing. The only other version of this song I've heard
Alien Ant Farm.
Exactly. That's the only other version. So I'm like, okay, but it's the Flash up against some chick and they're doing this duet. And the coolest thing about this, the only reason why I will defend my enjoyment of this quote unquote Glee song is because it turned me on to two musicians, two cellos, the cello guys. The band that they have is called Two Cellos, and it's just them on cellos, and they do renditions of all kinds of music, and like just Smooth Criminal on the cello. That's all it is. I will send you this video later, and you will watch it because it's just the Flash. It's
went to Clockwork Orange, me folks, save me. No. Went to hold my eyelids open. I must watch the Grant Gustin Smooth Criminal.
It's not. It's very well done. Is all I'm saying. Am I saying you have to watch every single thing ever from Glee?
Oh no, I know one thing. I'm in the minority when it comes to Glee because that show was on for how many years? Five years?
Like that.
So yeah, I just didn't, from what I remember, it was just like a bunch of Abercrombie and Fitch, you know, kind of teeny boppers. And that's what I was worried about when it came to Arrow, where it was all CW version of a DC, dark DC comic book character. I don't want to see Abercrombie, but they've flipped my, or subverted my expectations when it comes to that. And Barry, as you know, mom's apple pie as he is, he's not that. He's not Abercrombie and Fitch. He's just a good guy. So, I mean, I give credit to Gustin when it comes to that. And I just finished watching the last season that just aired. I've been trying to catch up before the new season starts. And still, he's still great. He has not wavered. And we've talked about it before. He's great in these crossovers. He's great with I want to say gimmicky episodes like in future seasons where they're doing the musical episodes of The Flash, which doesn't hold a candle to the Buffy musical episode, but it's still all right. Yeah. I mean, he's still good. I mean, he's a good anchor for that show. When you came into it, you didn't. I didn't think Amell was a good anchor for Arrow, and he was great. He may be a great anchor for this network. And going in, I didn't think Grant Gustin was a great anchor for The Flash, and he anchors this show. Everybody revolves around him and their relationships with him. So,
absolutely. Yeah, looking at Grant's filmography, I mean, it's essentially the DC TV universe. I mean, he did do, from 2010 to 2011, he did do West Side Story on Broadway. Right. He was in,
maybe he'll be in the movie. I know Spielberg's trying to do it. So,
God.
I know if he gets a Spielberg movie, that'll do it. But, you know, this TV schedule is a bear.
Yeah.
23 episodes.
Okay, I'll say this right now before we get into more of the casting couch stuff. These 23 episodes were a hell of a lot faster than Arrow's 23 episodes.
Well, because the Arrow seasons are usually less like the most, like, put upon. Arrow is the most put upon character where you just suffer like, oh, come on, Ollie, damn it. But Flash is like, hey, we're gonna go save the world. like, all right, let's go, you know. He's got like a team, and he had a team before Oliver had a team. Oliver went through a whole bunch of episodes, it was just him, and then Diggle kind of came on, and then Felicity came on, and it was a Trinity for a while. Flash from the word go has four people who know his identity. Five, if you count, wait, six? How many people know his identity the first episode?
So, yeah, Grant Gustin. The only other thing that he he's been in, he was on something for like 8 episodes. I forget what it is because I just closed the tab. But he was also on an episode of CSI Miami kind of thing.
Well, everybody was on that show. Everybody.
Yeah, everybody. Candace Patton, who plays Iris West Allen, she is a soap opera diva.
Really?
2011 for film, she was in The Craigslist Killer as Kate for the TV movie The Craigslist Killer. Young and the Restless, Bold and the Beautiful, like Days of Our Lives, One Tree Hill.
One Tree Hill, of course.
Yeah.
How do you feel about her as Iris?
I like her as Iris. I'm normally... Okay, how do I say this properly without offending my co-host and without offending the rest of the world?
You're used to the white Iris, essentially what you're saying.
I'm used to the character being Caucasian.
Mm-hmm.
However, as long as whatever person fills that, like, I can't see Iris as anything else now. After watching Candace, like
she is Iris.
I figured that out from the movies, even though
they cut out her role, the Iris West on the movies was also, I think it was played by the girl from Neighbors 2. I forget her name. She's really good. Another African American actress. But yeah. Essentially, they Robert Downey Jr.'d that character where now you can't see anything but the way they performed it.
Yeah, she had, so, like, you know, on an episode of Grey's Anatomy, also CSI Miami, not the same episode as Grant, which is kind of crazy. She was on Man Up for 3 episodes. I don't know why. Did anyone even watch that show?
Man Up, oh my God.
Yeah, that was in 2011. 2012, she was on an episode of Rizzoli and Isles, which is one of my favorite shows because it's Boston cops and that kind of thing. And Angie Harmon, I don't care how old she gets, as long as she keeps her voice in pristine condition, she will
Angie
always
Harmon.
Be hot to me. Yes.
The Whisperer.
That's right. let's see here. Daniel Pennebaker, Killer Frost, or the future Killer Frost.
Caitlin Snow.
Mm-hmm. You know what her debut was? And I did not realize this until just now, and I now remember it. Her debut was as Layla Williams in Sky High from 2005.
Oh my God.
But
to her credit, she's now like behind the cameras now. She's like the first female director of a CW. And it just happened recently. I think it was either just announced. I saw it somewhere. It was an article that came up on my Twitter feed that she's now either directing episodes of the Flash.
Mm-hmm.
And so she's a badass. So, I mean, and it comes to the characters on the show. We're going back to Iris a little bit. I think she's kind of fallen into the Laurel territory, where I think every character kind of has a niche.
Mm-hmm.
And with Iris, for the seasons from this season to the next season, they were always trying to figure out what to do with her. Where everybody else kind of, like, you know where Caitlin's going, I know where she's going. Cisco, I know where he's going. Wells, you definitely know where he's going. But Iris, you never kind of knew. It was like, today she's going to be working at a, you know, coffee shop. Oh, now she's a journalist. Oh, now she's a cop-ish. And now she's leading the team. This is like, okay, they were trying to figure out what to do with her. But, I mean, as terms as actress goes, I think she's good. And the girl that plays Pennebaker, was it Danielle Pennebaker?
Danielle Pennebaker.
She started off kind of like they wanted to make her the Raven, stoic. Yeah. You know, Asperger's, not knowing how to do social interactions, but they've warmed her up, ironically, as the series has gone on, even with this Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde thing they're doing as of late with Killer Frost.
Yeah, absolutely. I know this is one of your favorite shows, and I don't know if you remember or not. She had a recurring role for 6 episodes on Justified in 2014.
I don't remember where the hell she. What was her character's name?
Penny Cole.
I think she might have been working with the. She might have been an informant. I think I vaguely, vaguely remember. I gotta go back and watch Justified. Folks, Justified's a really good show. Side notes, footnotes. Justified, awesome show. But yeah, I gotta go watch. I think she might have been one of the Raylan always could find like informants to give him information, and I think she might have been one of them reoccurring ones that had to be put in witness protection because she talked. But you know, great actress, good actress.
Mm-hmm. Carlos Valdez. DCTV is his only, like, that's
much
it.
Older than he looks, by the way.
Yeah.
I saw him with a, like, it was between, I guess, seasons, mm-hmm. and he had like a full beard. I'm like, what the yes. Yeah. He's like, wait a minute, how old are you, man? I thought it was a fake beard. That's how I was like, wait, how old is he? But you know, he, another one, I did not like him. And probably by third episode, I was like, oh, this guy's awesome. This guy's the heart of the show, essentially.
I kind of got annoyed with him at first, but after a while, I very much enjoy Cisco at this point. All right, so we get into Dr. Wells, or at least who plays Dr. Wells, Tom Cavanaugh.
Tommy.
And this guy has been in a lot of stuff.
Yes.
Scrubs. Scrubs, yeah.
On my head. What's the name of that show? Is it Pushing? Not Pushing Daisies. Is it? No, that's a different guy. Was it Pushing Daisies? I can't remember.
He was in Viper for one episode in 1998.
Viper?
Hey, shut up.
Ed. Shut it was the name up. Of the show. I get Pushing Daisies and Ed mixed up for some reason. I don't know.
Okay. Yeah. He was in Sports Night. He was in... he was Ranger Smith in the 2010 Yogi Bear.
Yes, he was. I did not know that. Why do I remember that? I remember every sad bit of that. That happened, folks. That happened.
Mm-hmm. He was Will's father in Freddy vs. Jason in 2003.
Wait, I don't remember him there. Ooh, wow, that's a good one.
There you go. Like I said, Sports Night, Ed, Bang Bang, You're Dead.
Great title. Yep. The prequel to Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, I'm assuming.
Probably. I don't know. He was in Eli Stone for 7 episodes as a recurring role.
Right.
He was in Royal Pains as a recurring role, Jack O'Malley. He was in one episode of Doc McStuffins on the Disney Channel, or Disney Junior, or whatever it is.
Here's the question. Has he done a CSI or an NCIS?
That's not the real question. Look like it. No.
Ooh, wow.
Nope, he has not.
Fix that.
Making sure. Yep, nope. Has not. I do not see any of those credits here.
Unbelievable. The one man that's escaped. The one man.
So, I kind of have watched Robot Chicken off and on. I'm not like the biggest fan of it. But in 2015, he voiced Eobard Thawn in the episode Ants on a Hamburger.
Okay.
Okay. I don't. Whatever. And then obviously Harrison Wells, Eobard Thawn in, you know, Flash, Arrow, Legends, and Supergirl. Let's see. Who else? There have been a number of guest roles. Villains for this season, you got Leonard Snart and Nick Rory.
Yes. Perfect casting. A show from two guys from a show I don't like, but who have amazing chemistry together.
Yeah.
Wentworth Miller and
Dominic Purcell.
Purcell, yes. Dominic Purcell kind of got off on the wrong foot with me with Blade 3. That was the first time I had ever seen him, and I really don't like Blade 3. Neither does pretty much anybody who ever made that movie. So. So like every time I see him, it's like, oh God, or at least until, you know, Legends came along, and we'll get into that soon.
Later.
I was just like, oh, you're Dracula. You're the Dracula they came up with. Why? But no, his chemistry with Wentworth on Prison Break, though I do not like that show, is great. So casting them as like partners in crime is awesome. That was like perfect casting right there.
Yeah. That is very much perfect casting. I saw the first Blade movie. Oh my God, that movie is. I don't even want to say it. It's 20 years old.
Yeah.
Oof. Oh
I remember where I was when I saw that movie. I was Tallahassee AMC, Governor Square Mall. I remember where I was. I remember every ounce of that.
So I liked the first Blade film. The second movie creeped me out all to hell. And then when I rewatched it later, I'm like, this is bad.
You don't like the second Blade?
No.
That's Guillermo del Toro, baby.
That's the one with the face ripper off. No.
That's the Reavers or...
Yeah, Ripper? Whatever they're called. I don't know. But yeah, no.
I think that was my favorite one. I think the first one has the better villain because Deacon Frost is awesome. Yeah. Stephen Dorff, good shout out. Blade 2, I think, because it was before the age of comic books that we're living in right now, comic movies, like every frame of that movie looks like a comic book frame. Like, and Wesley Snipes, to his credit, I think Guillermo might have said this, he just knows how to pose like a comic book frame. Like, if you rewatch that movie, everything that Wesley does in that movie, he's like posing. He's posing. Mm-hmm. He's posing like he's like a freeze frame in a comic book. But I don't know. I like the look of it. I think the villain was a little weak, but that's probably about as bad as I mean, Ron Perlman was great in there. Mm-hmm. Chris Christopherson, you got the young what's his name from Walking Dead is up in there.
I don't know.
His name? I forget his name. Crossbow guy.
I don't know. They're all zombies to me. No zombies' lives matter.
Daryl. Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, Daryl. There you go. Daryl.
Brain froze.
Yeah. I don't know. So the episodes. You had said earlier that you were kind of skeptical going into this, but
very skeptical.
You came around though. I think after rewatching this first season again, the only thing I'll say is like kind of I'll piggyback what you said earlier. It is once we get to like episode 5, it kind of is villain of the week for a while.
Right.
You know, hitting power outage and. That kind of stuff. Power outage and Plastique, which were the 5th and 7th episodes. You know, 5, 6, and 7 were all villain of the week. By the time they hit 8, which was the first crossover, the cross with Flash and Arrow, that was fine. Man in the Yellow Suit is fine. Revenge of the Rogues, I loved. Sound and Fury, it sets up more story and it introduces Hartley, but it technically could be Villain of the Week as well.
Right.
Episode 12 of Season 1 is Crazy for You, and this is the one where you almost think, even though it's not going to happen, you almost think Barry and Caitlin are going to be a thing.
Yeah.
Because they have this whole storyline in this episode of...
They were setting it up from the first episode, though.
Yeah.
When she's putting the things on him and he's kind of flirt. Like, you don't smile a lot. It's like, oh... Now that I go back and watch it, it's kind of like, oh, I can see what they were trying to do here.
Yeah.
But nah. No. they don't have that. They have a brother-sister thing going on.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. But I love that it led to this episode. Because, as I said before... Barry's version of Smooth Criminal is amazing, and you'll hear that right here. So yeah, Crazy for You, kind of like the halfway point a little bit, because after that we get into 13 and 14, which is the Nuclear Man and Fallout, which is basically them figuring out that the Burning Man is Ronnie. Ronnie is alive. Hartley had showed Sisko that, hey, they're not dead kind of a thing in the episode before, episode 11.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so what are you thinking, like, up to the, you know, Nuclear Man and the Fallout, like that, like the first 14 episodes, what are your thoughts overall? Do you have any favorite moments? I know there's a lot of really cool moments in the first 14 episodes, but...
Yeah, I was just very... pleasantly surprised that it was moving at, like you were saying earlier, that it goes at such a easy to go clip.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that they were really, again, I like how they were, and they started doing a little bit of this with Arrow, and they were doing it very sneakily, expanding this universe.
Mm-hmm.
I love how Flash was just like, nah, man, we're going to really expand it. Here's Grodd. just in the back, just in the background, we're gonna throw it at you. We're gonna, we're gonna make mention of metahumans. We're gonna say all this, and I'm a sucker for them do little drops like that. But again, when it came to the characters, and I think we kind of skipped over one of the main characters I think really made this show hit for me. It's Jesse L. Martin.
Yes,
Jesse L. Martin, a vet of the show I love, Law and Order, in the criminal justice system. Law and Order has such great chemistry with Gustin. And their relationship is a lot of what made this show work for me, especially as this has they've kind of got away with it in the last couple seasons, but the first season especially, I believe them. I believe their father-son love, and it doesn't seem like a put-on. It appears that they have a history, and that's, that could just be because Jesse L. Martin's a freaking badass and such a talented son of a bitch, but the chemistry works both ways. So every time they have like father-son moments, and John Wesley Shipp as well. Awesome fathers. I mean, the fact that he has two great actors, John Wesley Shipp is great, and Jesse L. Martin is unsung to work off, and they both have good chemistry with Grant Gustin, and I think that's what really hit home for me, was like, you know what, I like these people. I can the Monster of the Week stuff, as we're getting to the 8 episodes or whatnot in the Arrow Flash, it's fine. But when they're sitting around and it's just Jesse L. and it's given a heart to heart, because heart to heart moments in TV shows could suck. They can be so cliche, and so sometimes they are, and sometimes the dialogue is they're purposefully like saying exposition because they have to recap people who haven't seen the show. But for some reason, Jesse L. and Grant can sell it. I can buy it. I can buy. Oh, this is what fathers do say. I can hear this conversation because Jesse L. Martin is a vet. He knows what the hell's going on, and I mean, they've kind of downplayed him. It might be because of his doing, because the man is a Broadway phenom, so he might not be able to do the show as frequently as he did before. But when he's on with it, the man has chemistry with everybody. But with his chemistry with Grant, I think makes the show go for season one.
Yeah, absolutely. I completely agree. This show debuted, and I'm only bringing this up because I wanted to make a joke, but I'm not going to. This show debuted 10 years after Lenny's death. Jerry Orb, I was like, when Flash was first announced, when the first episode appeared on the CW, I'm like, hey, that's Ed Green. When's Lenny Briscoe going to come in? And I'm like, oh, wait, whoops. Oh, no. But hey, like, yeah. Just like you, like, I watched, the Lenny and Ed show on Law and Order.
The Lenny and Ed show. What the best combo of cops.
If you watch Law and Order, the main show, from the beginning, it's not them, right? They have a rotating set.
Joe, what's his name, from Goodfellas was on there once, wasn't he?
Joe Pesci?
No. Servino, Paul Servino. Sorry. Was he one of them?
Yep, Paul Servino. The only person I think that those first few years, and I'd have to go back and look, and I'm not doing that right now. I think the only person in the first few years of Law and Order's run, the only person that did not change was S. Apathia Murkerson as the captain.
Right.
Because she was just always there. The cops always rotated in and out. Yada 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 yada. As soon as I saw, I'm like, hey, it's Ed Green. That's awesome.
And it shows in these episodes, because that guy's a good actor, man.
Oh, yeah.
So there's scenes where he's in with, it's him and Tom Cavanaugh having odds at it. And they're both vets. So you're just like, okay, this is higher brow than, the universe they're inhabiting kind of dictates. It's like dropping Daniel Day-Lewis in like a Teletubbies episode. It's like, whoa, what's going on here? This is kind of bad. This act is almost too good for this show where a guy named the Rainbow Raider's running around. So it's kind of like, I always take a step back from like when I see Jesse L. show up, or Jesse L. do a scene with somebody, and he, or another guest that we almost forgot is, what's his name? Jack Bristow, who plays Professor Stein.
Oh, yeah, Professor Stein. Awesome. That would Victor, be Victor Garber.
Always awesome Garber, who, again, great actor, Broadway phenom, badass. So when there's scenes with those guys, it's like, oh, if Jesse L's talking to Victor Garber or Victor Garber's talking to Tom Cavanaugh, you got some good acting going on here, really good. I mean, and to Arrow's credit, you had some. I mean, a lot of it falls on Amell, but here you had like Grant surrounded by really strong vets. I mean, I think you have Blackthorne on Arrow. I think that was the biggest vet you got, and maybe Merlin. But
yeah.
Here you got everywhere Grant turns, you're gonna get you have a foundation of really strong, solid actors. John Wesley Shipp is like the fourth.
Yeah, well, he's the original Flash. The
original Flash, right?
You know, I mean, that's just the way it is. And once I think it's season 2 or season 3 of The Flash. I forget how long it took them to have him do this. As soon as Joe starts, like, they do this alternate reality thing or whatever, and as soon as he starts singing, oh my god.
That was on Rent. It was in Rent, for Christ's sake. The guy's a badass.
Yeah. Absolutely. Love that guy. So we get Rogue Time, we get Tricksters, and hey, look, the original Trickster is back. Luke Skywalker is the original Trickster.
Mark Hamill. Mark Hamill. If you ever had, I mean, I'm not a huge fan of The Last Jedi, but if that, the only thing I will say is I think it reminded people that Mark Hamill's a badass. He can fucking act rings around people. The guy's been doing it for years as the Joker, but the fact that it's very easy, it would have been very easy for Mark to be doing Trickster as the Joker, and he doesn't.
Yeah.
There's a very good delineation between the two. And it'd have been very easy if he was lazy at this point, but he's not. Mark Hamill gets it. I think he gets his universe, and you know, hey, I get to go back and play this character. I played on this kind of fledgling goof of a show years ago that, you know, got a cult following. Sure. But I'm not gonna make it the Joker. Because that's what I was worried about when he was coming back to do it. I was like, he's going to sound like the Joker. He's going to sound like Joker. There might be like octaves that are similar, but he plays them way different, which I thought was great.
I hear Joker. I hear a dark version of Luke.
Very dark version of Luke, there. Definitely.
I mean, like, definitely. Like, but still, it's still Mark Hamill as the, like, when he starts doing the, you know, his laugh, Trickster laugh, like
Trickster,
that's
when
I hear
Joker laugh.
Yeah, the Trickster laugh is very different than the Joker laugh, so that's when I hear the actual Trickster character from the old show. But the rest of the time I'm like, this is just an evil Luke Skywalker mixed in with an evil Joker.
And they even make a joke about that in one of these episodes he shows up on. So
yeah, absolutely. I just, yeah, as we've been going through this, absolutely love that. You know, we have episode 18, All-Star Team Up, which is, this is kind of the, it has been debuting on Arrow, I guess, at this point, maybe, but, you know, the Atom, and I'm gonna say this right now, up until Brandon Routh was cast as Ray Palmer.
Didn't like him, did you?
That was the single actor in the DC whatever entertainment stuff, absolutely loathe the guy.
Didn't like him, right? And he wins you over, doesn't he? It's more of an Arrow season 3 conversation, but no, I'm right there with you. Even I think what came out, this came out before Scott Pilgrim, or Scott Pilgrim came out first?
I don't know.
I can't remember, because he's in there too for a little bit. But his Ray Palmer is, I mean, the aw shucksness of the guy is entertaining to me. I don't know what it is.
The Ray Palmer stuff is what should have been written for Superman Returns. The aw shucks Clark Kent kind of stuff.
Right, right, right.
Like, aw shucks, Miss Lane. I, you know, kind of, like, don't get me wrong. Thank God we did not get Nicolas Cage as Superman, even though we are getting him as Superman at one point here.
Well, we have him right now on Teen Titans Go, the movie.
That's right. But yeah, no, I could not stand Brandon Routh. I could not stand the guy. But here as Adam, as Ray Palmer in Arrow, here in Flash, absolutely love the guy. Once he eventually switches over to Legends, still love the guy.
Gets better. He gets better on
Legends.
So
much better and better and better. So much.
His relationship with Mick is awesome.
Yeah, it is.
Haircut. Hey, haircut. That stuff is great.
Yeah. It's amazing. What was I going to say about him? Since I don't know, switch gears a little bit, because we forgot to mention this. Throughout this whole season of Flash, the first season, and then Arrow season 3, they kind of tease up a little bit of Barry and Felicity.
Right.
Will they, won't they kind of stuff, and they have this nice little moment and things like that and whatever. And again, another one of those what's wrong with us, you know, yeah. Whereas Caitlin and Barry is more of what's wrong with us, why are we, you know, not putting ourselves out there. Barry and Felicity is like, we're both pining after people we can't have. Maybe we should get together. Oh, wait, no, that's not, you know,
no.
Good
they're,
idea.
They're the same person. They can't. They're too similar. They're like dating themselves. It's like, no. They need kind of an. I think the way they work is fine. I think they kind of handled it when he first showed up on Arrow season 2. It's just kind of like, you can see when it clicks. It's like, I don't feel it. Yeah. I never felt it between those two.
Everyone always talks about shipping Oliver and Felicity, Alicity, or whatever the hell the ship. I don't even care. I hate ship. I hate that there are ship names for stuff. I just cannot stand it. But Barry and Felicity, if he didn't already have a predestination for Iris kind of a thing, like, even though they are so similar, like you said, it would be almost like dating yourself. I do like them in scenes that they are in together when they, you know, are concerned for each other, when they're having a joke with each other and doing all that kind of stuff. I do very much like them. I believe that they could be a couple more than I believe her and Oliver could be a couple.
Really?
At least at this point in the universe. Later down the line, not so much, but I don't know. And then we get, who is Harrison Wells? Which, they introduce Hannibal Bates here. I wonder if that's his real name.
Hannibal Bates.
Yeah.
I remember, what the heck is the name of that movie? I think when I first saw him.
the character debuted, Everyman / Hannibal Bates, debuted in 52 number 17, August 30th, 2006. So it isn't just them making a joke at, you know, Psycho. So it is I don't know. That's the first thing I thought of was, like, you know, between Psycho and Silence of the Lambs was the first thing I thought of. So, I don't know. How do you feel about, like, you mentioned it earlier that Grodd's kind of in the background here for a lot of the season. Do you feel like a lot of the Flash stuff that we already knew before going into this, like if anyone had watched Justice League Unlimited, do you feel like all the Flash stuff is here that we do know, like Grodd, like this, like that?
These guys in the TV show, I think, are very good at setting stuff up. Sometimes they're not great on the follow through, but they're very good at setting stuff up. So, the fact that they gave me the mention of Grodd, because Grodd is a major Flash villain. I mean, Captain Cold, Grodd, Mirror Master, those are the ones that when I think of Flash Rogues Gallery. Those are the ones I always go to. And Grodd is always, like, right there. If you ever watch Justice League, like you're talking about Justice League Unlimited, Grodd is a huge character. Like,
oh, yeah.
I mean, he was, like, I think he took over from Lex at one point. He's a badass. So, and I think they've always wanted to do it. And I know if they had their druthers, they would do a lot more of Grodd, especially with the whole, I think Andy Serkis kind of helped us out with the anthropomorphic monkey thing going on. But it's probably very, very effing expensive to use Grodd. And Killer Shark, speaking of other characters. It's very expensive to do those characters. Though there's when your character, one of your main characters, is so expensive to do. But every time he showed up, I think if you temper him, you save the budget. Okay, look, we have Grodd this season. We're going to put most of our money into Grodd. for this one episode, and that's it. Don't you don't have to have Grodd as an old, like every episode, because you can't. That's like $100 million picture, but or whatever. But I've always liked him. I think they've used him properly on this show throughout all the seasons. I think they've used him as properly. I think that what was the last one they had. What the hell was the name of Grodd? Grodd Island.
It was
Kingdom
Grodd
of Grodd or something like that.
Something like that. Yeah, I don't remember off the top.
But I thought it was really good. I think the way they use Grodd is great.
Yep. Grodd makes America great again.
It can't be much worse than well, a monkey controlling our brains. It can't be much worse.
So as these final episodes are winding down, you know, who is Harrison Wells, the trap, Grodd lives. You're basically getting the whole plan of what Eobard is doing. At first, throughout this entire season, I didn't care whether Eddie lived or died.
Yep. I think
at first.
I guarantee that was on purpose.
I did not care because Eddie, in the beginning, Eddie, like, he's so inconsequential up until, like, the last five episodes.
Right.
And the way that he is portrayed, not this is not the actor's fault, but the way that the actor is portraying the character from whatever's written, I don't know if he ad-libbed any of this stuff. The big giant smile every time Barry comes around, or the
hey
or the,
Barry,
like oh god, oh, oh god,
hey Barry, how you doing, Barry?
No.
I know you can keep secrets, Barry. Oh, he has that voice.
I did not have any faith in Eddie until they revealed to him that Barry. Until they started working together, that like so late in the season, like I said. Last five or six episodes,
right?
I did not care about Eddie until the last five or six when they reveal, like them, like when he's like, "Oh, well, how are you going to take care of?" Because there's one point where they have to get like a multiple car chase thing, or multiple incidents are happening, and Flash is working with Joe and Eddie, and Eddie like asks him in a flash, like, "How are you going to do?" Oh. That's how you're going to do it. Whoops. Okay. Like, because Flash just zooms cars around and puts Joe in another car and
right.
All this stuff and everything else. So, like up until they started working together to make the city safe again or more safe or whatever you want to call it, I had zero for Eddie Thawne.
I don't want to go Machiavellian here, but I think the fact that the ending sequence, even though it's plainly, it should have been plainly obvious what was going to happen. The fact that he's so inconsequential, you're saying, and we don't like him, and he's kind of like the other guy, every teen year, you know, romantic chick flick, you know, the guy you don't like because he's in the way of the hero getting the girl kind of person. I think they did that on purpose, because when he, spoiler alert, pulls the trigger, you're like, oh, like, you know, you give you that moment. If you kind of made him a good guy, it might have been a different kind. It might have still worked. I think it would have been different, because when he pulls that trick, it makes it more tragic, where he does the first thing you really like, but the first thing he really likes is him killing himself.
Well,
so it's like, damn it, we can't even enjoy the fact that he's become somebody now we really, really like because he's dead. Because as the show is going on, you don't really like him. He doesn't really do anything that you're like, oh, yeah, go edit. You don't give a shit. You don't care. Yeah. So when that moment happens, one, it comes out of nowhere, and it shouldn't have come out of nowhere. His name is Thawne. The bad guy's name is Thawne. They even bring up, is this Thawne? You should know that the easiest way is to fucking kill Eddie Thawne. But you don't really care because you don't like Eddie. You don't give a shit about
him. Like
Eddie,
I said, I gave a shit about him before the shot, because like I said, once they start working together, once he's actually in on it, I don't like his whole thing after that where he's like, well, you got to tell Iris. If you don't tell Iris, I'm going to tell Iris. You know, that whole thing. I didn't like that. But when they're out catching the bad guys and that kind of thing, I liked him there. I love the little speech, and technically, his death is all Martin Stein's fault. Jack Bristow killed Eddie Thawne.
Well, it is Jack Bristow. He doesn't give a shit about anybody.
I know, right? But yeah, he, you know, shoots himself, and thus, you know,
Back to the Future is Eobard.
Yeah, yeah, pretty much, yeah. I love, like, season one, episode 23, Fast Enough, the season finale, is by far one of, if not the best ever, superhero television show season finales.
Pretty good. I think Arrow season two, season finale, it's like my favorite of all of them. But this one's right there. Because it was the whole show, the whole episode, I'm like, how the fuck are they going to get out of this situation? What's going to happen?
Yep. And I actually, it's so funny, I actually had to watch the season one finale twice.
Really?
Because I was so tired last night, I started watching it. Next thing I know, it's like 5 a.m. and something else is on my net. Like, oh no, it wasn't something else on my Netflix on my phone. It was like 5 a.m. and I was like, season 2, episode 4. I'm like, wait, what? What happened? Hold, wait a minute here. I know I didn't watch the last four episodes. So, yeah. Season 1 of The Flash, it's superb. It really is. There's not a lot here that I dislike other than Eddie up until he has his, you know,
it's come to God moment with a gun. Essentially. It's come to Grodd moment.
Yeah, there you go.
I'm gonna blame episode 22 of The Flash, and this has pissed me off till this day. And it's probably has nothing to do with the Flash people, the directors, Greg Berlanti. I blame CW. Because CW's marketing department essentially spoils the season finale of season 3 of Arrow in their goddamn commercial for this because it shows Oliver Queen, who at the time, we don't know if he's
all right,
completely like under the spell of Ra's al Ghul,
right,
helping Barry out. And I'm like, okay, I guess he's not under the spell of Ra's al Ghul anymore. Why would you show that in a fucking commercial? It doesn't make it. And it, to this day,
the episode itself, like, I was not going to stop watching Flash at episode 22 just to catch up Arrow to see where Oliver is. Like, I forgot about it too. Like, I'm like, oh right, like I knew he went to go get Ronnie Stein, you know, Firestorm and Ollie. I knew he went to go get them. I forgot where Arrow was at the time because I'm like, hey, he's the Dark Archer. What the hell? What's going on here? He's got black arrows.
You're not supposed to... the whole thing. So when it comes up, I'm like, well, this is kind of anticlimactic. I know he's going to turn because the way they left the episode before, to this day, it bothers me. I'm like, who decided on that? Who said, don't worry about it. F it. It's like, God, you just essentially spoil the entire storyline. And that's just probably one of the faults of season 3 of Arrow.
Yeah. I blame Arrow. I fully blame Arrow. Anything else you want to bring up about season 1 of The Flash?
Tom Cavanaugh's good. We've talked about him. I'm glad they only flirted with the Sherlock pop text when Barry does the CSI thing. Because every time I see that in other shows, especially with the beginning of this one and near the earlier stages of this episode, I'm like, why are you ripping off Sherlock? Don't rip off Sherlock, man. Get out of here. You're not Sherlock Holmes. Get out of here. You're a regular guy. You're just a regular guy. Even without your lightning didn't make you Sherlock Holmes. Get out of here. So, yeah, I'm glad they didn't make it like, you know, crime of the week. They really pulled back on this CSI stuff. And I thought they were gonna make it like a motif as I was going. I was like, oh no! I think they did it for the first three episodes or the first three times he does a CSI thing, and I'm like, no, man, you're a superhero. Do the other thing. But no, everything else. Grant Gustin again proved me wrong. Jesse L. Martin, great. The guest stars are great. There's a guy who plays Kyle Nimbus. He also plays Victor Zsasz on Gotham. He's ironically, I guess, or coincidentally, on a show called Barry on HBO, and he's freaking amazing with Bill Hader. He's awesome. But yeah, a lot of the guest stars on this show, and this show has a litany of amazing guest stars. Like, what? Goldberg? Edge? It's like crazy guest stars on this show.
Yeah.
It's always been entertaining. And this show is essentially if you get away from the dourness that is Arrow, which it works for, you kind of want to have the other side of the coin where it's upbeat and happy. And when it starts getting dark, Savitar, it kind of doesn't work that well.
See, I thought it did because you have, like, up until the actual
I'll watch
reveal,
Arrow if I want that. I don't want to watch it in Barry, man. But, you can give me stakes without being depressing. As season one proved, you had stakes and I wasn't depressed at all in the whole season. And it had crazy stakes.
Right. But the trajectory that the show takes up until you get to Savitar, like, it was going darker, 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 and now it's leaning more towards light again, season four. See, the issue with the first three seasons of The Flash is that season one, Speedster. Season two, Speedster. Season three, Speedster.
Four fixed it. I think four got right back on track.
And exactly, because four, I think at one point we see Eobard's character at some point in some sort of timeline thing or whatever, but season four was the Thinker. Season four was a completely different animal.
And it injected another character that brought new life to the show, which in Digby, Elongated Man, that character, I think now he's a series regular because for some reason, every scene that guy is in, I forget the guy actor's name, it's like a breath of fresh air. It's like, oh, wow, I forgot. Flash is supposed to be the fun show. It's not as fun as Legends of Tomorrow, but it's the, like, you know, the super, I don't even want to do Superman, Batman, but he's the Superman show. Yeah. Flash is the Superman show. Arrow is the Batman show. I don't want the Superman show feeling like the Batman show and vice versa.
But there are times when Superman does have to go dark.
Sure.
That's fine.
That's not all the damn
time. It's not. No, it was one season. Come on.
Right.
It was one season.
That's 23 episodes. That's a long, long time.
But it's okay because Flash is so much easier to watch than Arrow. Like, even when Flash is at his darkest hour, we don't necessarily need the Matrix of Leadership to light that just yet. You know, I mean,
Flash is like the first 10 minutes of Transformers the movie, and Arrow's the last half is dark and depressing. Everybody's dead. Prime is on a table. They're dropping Transformers and Unicron's intestines. It's this dark.
Oh God!
That's what the folks check it out. It's pretty good.
Yes. September 27th in theaters for one night only.
God, if it's down here, I'm going.
It has to be. All right. Season one of The Flash, 0 to 5. What are you going to rate it?
I'll give it a 4. Solid 4. The Creature of the Week stuff kind of takes a little bit of it away from, but I mean. For a show that I had zero, I was just like, this is not going to work. Who the hell is Grant Gustin? I don't get this. And now it's like, you know, either they're kind of fighting between, is it the best show on CW? Is it between this and Arrow? It's amazing where it came from. So
yeah. This is sacrilege to Optimus, but I'm just going to say this right now since we're comparing the two. Mm. Optimus is Arrow, and Arrow can die, and Flash is Rodimus, and Rodimus Prime is the best Transformers leader ever.
Oh, come on. Now you're just smoking dope. Are you crazy?
Nope.
Are you crazy?
Nope, I'm not crazy. All right, for me, I will also give Flash Season 1 4.5. All right. No, it's not. I've always been like, yes, Optimus is the John Wayne, is the father figure, but Optimus does a lot of stupid stuff in G1.
Does he get Rodimus killed? Oh no, that's the other guy, right? That's the other. Don't get me in a Transformers debate with you, okay? We're not gonna get started.
Yes, we will. I'm also gonna give 4.5 out of 5 for The Flash Season 1. We're gonna take a quick break. Come back with Arrow Season 3 after this.
Speaking of dark.
Yeah, really. Where's Damian when you need him?
Who is Damian Wayne in this situation?
Oh, God.
Is it Roy Harper? Who the fuck is Damian? Thea?
Oh,
I guess.
Thea would have to be Batgirl.
Mm.
So that's my story. I've spent my whole life searching for the impossible, never imagining that I would become the impossible.
So why come to me? Something tells me you didn't just run 600 miles to say hi to a friend.
All my life, I've wanted to just do more. Be more. And now I am. And the first chance I get to help someone, I screw up. What if Wells is right? What if I'm not a hero? What if I'm just some guy who was struck by lightning?
I don't think that bolt of lightning struck you, Barry. I think it chose you.
I'm just not sure I'm like you, Oliver. I don't know if I can be some vigilante.
You can be better. Because you can inspire people.
We are back here on Remote Control. Now it's time to talk about Batman Season 3.
Master Queen. Yes. Master Queen. Oh, Arrow Season 3.
Imagine if Walter was his butler instead of his stepfather.
Oliver.
Yes, Oliver. Exactly. Exactly. Arrow Season 3 has such a stigma for me because it's so Batman. That's what they were going for here. Yes, I love the Sarah bits and all of that. I think that's great that they try to do all that. And I forgot it wasn't until Season 4 that they actually do revive her. I thought they did it in Season 3.
Must have been the story. Like, wait, that's it?
Yeah, really. Where's Sarah? Like, exactly. Like, hello. So yeah, really quickly, before we get too far into the episode stuff, recurring roles for this season, we have Tatsu is here, Danny Brickwell is here, Ra's al Ghul, not Raj. They actually started saying Ra's as I was
they tried to make sense of it because you have to be in the league to say Ra's, and if you're out of the league you say Ra's, but it's always Ra's.
Batman wasn't in the league and he still said Ra's in Batman the Animated Series.
Damn right he did. Whatever Conroy says goes.
Exactly. You have J.R. Ramirez as Ted Grant Wildcat. You have Charlotte Ross as Donna Smoke. Brandon Routh as Ray Palmer / the Atom. Guest people, you've got Eugene Bird as Andy Diggle. Surprisingly, John's brother is alive. Whatever. You have Amy Gumenick as Cupid. Doug Jones as Deathbolt. Mark Singer as General Matthew Shreve. Wonder if he's related to the Batman Beyond Shreve. Anyway, Katrina Law as Nyssa. Okay, now let me ask you this. I've been dying to ask somebody this for the longest time.
Yes. Ask away.
It would have been too on the nose for them to use Talia. Is right. Nyssa his actual She is another. Okay.
Right. I thought the same thing, and I had to go back in my comic book files. I was like, "Is this an actual?" Yes, she does exist in the comic books.
You have Katie Lotz superbly filling Sarah Lance Canary, Kelly Hu.
Katrina Law, by the way, I really really like. She's awesome. Yeah. By the way.
Yeah, she is. What else has she been in? She's been in some stuff. Let's see here. She was in Third Watch in 2001. She was in Chuck as Alexis for one episode in 2009.
Good old Chuck.
Legend of the Seeker.
Legend of the Seeker. I remember watching that show on Saturday afternoons.
Oh, wow. She had a main role on last year's Training Day TV series as Detective Rebecca Lee.
I didn't watch it for the simple fact that it shouldn't be a Training Day TV series.
Yeah, no.
out of general principle, I did not watch it. Rest in peace, Bill Paxton, but nah, bruh.
Yeah, nah. No. There's only one Training Day, and that's not it.
It had a definitive end.
Yeah, exactly.
It pretty much ended.
Yep. And you've got Colton Haynes as Roy Harper / Arsenal.
/ Speedy /
whatever.
/ whatever the hell you want to call himself this week.
Yeah, I'm very down on the season.
we've talked about this where we're talking about season one and two.
Yeah.
It has 9 great episodes. I was in for 9 episodes. I mean, even with, you know, Laurel doing her, this is when I think I started to really not like this character. I mean, I was kind of like, I don't really care about this character, whatever, sure. Mm-hmm. And then when she starts becoming, you know, violent, angry Laurel's, you're nowhere near Katie Lotz, so you can't be Canary. But first 9 episodes, I really dug. I they really set up the dread of Ra's al Ghul properly.
Yeah.
Nissa, however you want to pronounce it, she's very great. Just the way they do that, I really like the Malcolm Merlin Thea, I'm training you to be, you know, I like that stuff. But again, I repeat, as soon as Oliver falls off the cliff, the season falls off a cliff with him for me.
Yeah.
If they had the balls, Oliver shouldn't have shown up until either the season finale or the season premiere of next season. That's how I would have done it. But again, you can't have the show without your main character. You could have pushed this back. The Climb, I think, is the name of the episode, which is a great, fantastic episode. It might be one of the best episodes of CW, DC, whatever. It's great. They would have pushed that back to maybe episode 23, the series finale, mm-hmm. or maybe episode 12, somewhere in the middle, a little bit farther. They wanted to do it before the winter break or whatnot.
Okay, so this is the one season out of all these shows where I first realized winter break, you know, mid-season finale. The whole term mid-season finale came up to me with this episode because I remember the advertisements for The Climb for this episode. All is this episode is missing, even though it didn't make it horrible, is Miley Cyrus. Sorry.
he was watching from a distance.
Exactly. but yeah, I specifically remember this being like, oh my god, you mean to tell me we have to now wait until next year? Like, we have to now wait until, I'm like, oh god, really? The first 9 episodes, episode 5 is by far my favorite episode so far of the entire series as we're going through it. Season 1, 2, 3 of Arrow, The Secret Origin of Felicity Smoke is by far the best episode this show has done outside of The Climb, obviously.
You love emo smoke.
it was crazy. Like, I was wondering when they were actually going to get to it. And obviously they did, and it's super cool. I don't know.
Starting off, I guess, is when you get the sign of Ra's al Ghul title screen, which I thought was cool when they changed the Arrow of the season to that thing, that brand that Oliver gets on his back. I thought that was all pretty cool. I'm trying to think of all the good things I liked about the season. Not skipping ahead to The Climb, I really thought, again going in, I'm like, nobody's going to, first going into Batman Begins, I was like, nobody's going to be better than the Ra's al Ghul in the animated series, and Liam Neeson was really, really good. And then I'm watching this, I'm like, is he going to be better than Liam Neeson? And Matt Nabel, I thought, was really, really good as Ra's al Ghul. I thought he again surprised me. I was like, he's really, this, just the way he portrays calm and confidenceness, like confidence, right. When he's just like, I'm not, you don't understand. It's almost like a child threatening you. When Oliver threatens him, he's just like, he almost feels sorry for you, like, you don't understand what's going to happen to you. I've already seen the end of this movie. I know how it ends. You do not. I hate to break it to you. That way, that's how I always saw Ra's, where Ra's al Ghul in the comic books, the animated series, Batman is, you know, I'm going to fight for justice, and Ra's just always wants to tell Batman, what you're fighting is such a lost cause. What are you doing? Trust me, follow my way, even though I'm pretty mad from Lazarus Pits, but I'm pretty attuned to what's supposed to happen. And I thought they captured that in Matt Nabel's character.
They did, but still nobody can touch David Warner at this point. Yes, Matt Nabel is amazing.
David Warner is the guy that did the voice on the anime series, right?
Yep.
Yeah, he's perfect. He's the best. He is the best. I'm glad you told me his name, because I've never knew his name, but I always hear that detective. I always hear that yeah. voice in my head when I think of Rich Uncle.
Brave and the Bold, which was episode 8, which is the second part of Flash versus Arrow.
That was Boomerang, the other yep. Boomerang, yep. the non-Jai Courtney Boomerang.
Oh my God!
Yes, there are two Captain Boomerangs. One's Jai Courtney, and one is the guy from Spartacus, I believe. I forget his name. He has like a weird name on Spartacus, but yeah, he's good.
Yeah. So this was the Boomerang episode with Digger Harkness. I love seeing Caitlin and Cisco in Starling City. I hate that name. Change it to Star City already. Assholes. Love that. I think Canaries and The Return, 13 and 14 of Season 3, are good episodes. And then at that point... maybe the last
this is when you start falling.
Yeah, pretty much like the last three. The only reason why I want to mention episode 19 out of season 3 is because of the title. I was half waiting for John Travolta and Christian Slater to show up.
What's the title of the episode?
Broken Arrow.
Oh. Howie Long just strolls on by. Delroy Lindo in a helicopter, that'd be great.
Yeah, it would be.
I'll say this. This is me giving a positive to Suicide Squad. I do prefer their version of Katana than the version of Katana we got on this show. Though the actress, I think her name is, I'm going to say it wrong, Ryla Fukushima, I think her name is. She was great in The Wolverine. Terrific in The Wolverine. And she's all right in here, but I think... Like, the Katana on the Suicide Squad, I've always said, is a bunch of great characters in a really horrible movie. Mm-hmm. And I think the Katana on that in that movie is more the way I saw the character. I think the way they did the visual style of what she looked like. But it could just be budget. Because the costume that Katana wears in this season kind of looks very cosplay-y, I guess I would say.
Yeah. Yeah, it does. I love the whole Canaries bit. With Sarah and Laurel and all that, one way to get Katie back in the suit without, you know, the whole hallucination flashback kind of thing where,
right,
you know. Oh, and that's the other thing I want to mention about this season. He was in, I believe he was in season 2 for a little bit, but the new Vertigo.
Oh, Peter Stormare.
Oh, my God.
Peter, the devil, one of my favorite actors who ever played Satan in Constantine, the movie. Yes.
Yes.
Awesome. Awesome.
Okay. I bet you never thought in a million years that I could tie the CW DC TV universe to a Bruce Willis movie.
Well, I did with Jai Courtney.
Okay, well, yeah, but nobody counts Die Hard 5.
Nobody does. Nobody does. That's a fact. That is a fact
exactly.
Right there.
So, Peter Stormare, I kind of recognized him in season 2 a little bit when we saw him. But now that he is full on the count here in season 3, I'm like, hey, it's the guy. It's the Russian guy from Armageddon when they go up to the space station.
He just skipped right over Fargo, huh? Just right over Fargo. Just...
Is Bruce Willis in Fargo?
No, I'm just saying. Peter Stormare does such great work. He's in John Wick, for Christ's sake.
Mm-hmm. He's also in Bad Boys 2.
Oh, he's great in Bad Boys 2.
I know.
He's great in that movie.
I know.
Peter Stormare is one of those actors when he shows up. It's like, oh, hey, Peter Stormare. He's
yeah,
like,
exactly.
Hey.
Yay.
It's like, cheers. Oh, Stromare is here. But no, he's great. The only reason I didn't like the character. I love the character. It's just, only thing that gave me, you know, pause was, even drugged, he shouldn't be hanging in a fight with Oliver Queen. There's no way he's like this. They're fighting and I'm like, Peter, you're like 59 at the youngest. You're fighting Stephen Amell, who's a trained murderer for 5 years. There's no way you should be knocking him down, holding him against the wall. It's all, you know, that almost gave me pause. But I mean, when he's giving out dialogue, it's great. He's whistling tunes as he blows stuff up. It's great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. the season finale for Arrow season 3. Wikipedia needs work. We all know this, but seriously, the end of the way that they end the synopsis for or the description for the episode. Oliver decides to live a lonely life away from his family. He boards a ship headed to Coast City. He doesn't board a ship. Him and Felicity get in a fucking car. They drive away. In a car? Yes. Like, seriously. What the hell?
Even the Wikipedia person who was typing it gave up on the season. It's like, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, Oliver got on a boat or something. I don't know. Whatever.
Exactly. Like, seriously? Really? That's, God. Arrow season 3.
What did you like? What did you like other than, the characters? What stuff did you like about it? We're trying to find all the stuff we like because there's a lot of stuff we don't.
Yeah, obviously. I do like how the title screen has changed and it's another version of the Arrowhead kind of thing. I think that's cool. I do love the crossover bits. I do enjoy that. I love seeing Cisco, Caitlin, and Felicity all do their geeky stuff. I love the relationship that Barry and Oliver have. I think it's super cool. Like you said earlier, basically two sides to the same coin. I kind of am enjoying Diggle's arc more than Oliver's at this point in the season.
Suicide Squad arc?
Yeah, I kind of dig that. I think that's kind of cool that they're going that route. And the whole thing.
You think that was kind of their version of a backdoor pilot that they changed their mind on? That's what I was getting out of that episode.
I think so, yeah. I think so. I'm probably wrong, but I think so. I think they wanted to try to maybe give him his own show or give the Suicide Squad their own show where he would still be on Arrow, but he would guest star on...
He's like the control of the Suicide Squad or whatever, giving them their orders and then disappear or whatever.
Yeah. There's only one woman that could ever play Amanda Waller, and she ain't here.
Yeah.
There's only one woman.
Well, there's two. I would say there's arguably two women that could play Amanda Waller. Okay. CCH Pounder is number one.
Thank you.
Viola Davis does a pretty damn good job. And again, great characters. In a shitty movie.
Yeah.
If you put Viola Davis as Amanda Waller in a better movie, she works. She's a great Amanda Waller because she got that I don't care down. It's just she was in a really bad movie. But CCH Pounder, yes, I agree. That's Amanda Waller. Yeah. It will always be an Amanda Waller.
When you can get Claudette Wims to be Amanda Waller and be a completely different character from what she is on The Shield, that's amazing.
That is very true.
Yeah, I mean, come on.
Like on the show, she's like, yeah, she's a good person. And Amanda Waller, she's the scum of the earth.
Well, it's one of those things where, obviously The Shield came kind of, I saw The Shield before I saw most of the Justice League stuff at the time, back in 2001, 2002. And okay. I still, I don't even need to look this up. I remember it to this day. March 8th, 2002 is when The Shield debuted on FX because that was the show that kicked off all of their, or FX original TV stuff.
Original programming, right?
As soon as, I didn't even know who, CCH Pounder was. When I first saw this, she didn't even know, didn't even care. After watching three of the 7 seasons of that show at the time, I love her. And then
she's great. And then
I heard her on Justice League. I'm like, hey, it's Claudette. That's great. That's the best casting ever.
She will always have one of my favorite lines, which I think must have been on Justice League Unlimited. Maybe it was Justice League, where she just rolls up on Batman and goes, "We all have our secrets. Rich boy. I was like, yo! Why do I remember that little exchange? Because it's badass. But yeah, I guess our point is that the woman who plays Amanda Waller on season 3, who's from Spartacus as well, same with Captain Boomerang, not intimidating enough. Amanda Waller is not supposed to be a supermodel because this girl who plays Amanda Waller, she's beautiful. Amanda Waller is supposed to be a bulldog. They've always referred to her as a bulldog. She doesn't give a shit. And as I said, she's ugly. She's just mean.
Yeah, exactly.
You shouldn't be awed by her beauty. You should be intimidated from the word go when you see Amanda Waller or hear Amanda Waller. And the girl who plays her, she's too neat for the part. Yeah. I would say. Yeah. I don't know why didn't this get CCH Pounder to play her on Arrow. I would have cast her again. That'd have been perfect. She's a TV actress.
So there was one moment. There's you asked me about other stuff that I liked in episode. It's episode 19. I forget what episode 19 is off the top of my head. I don't know. So there's one part of episode 19 where I absolutely. Of course it's Broken Arrow.
Yeah.
The car crash. When they get hit.
Oh, right.
When I was rewatching this in order to do this podcast, quite literally, at 4 a.m. with my office door closed, I quite literally jumped 2.5 inches out of my chair and almost screamed. Because I did not know that, like, I completely... That's why I don't go back to a lot of this stuff. You know, I pay attention to the stuff that I like. I don't really like Arrow Season 3, so I don't remember half the stuff. But when there's a good moment that can actually lift me out of my damn chair, like, that's good. Because, like, I was like, oh, my God. Did that just happen? Oh, no. Like, wow. Yeah, that was...
I think that they were still... I mean, at this point, I guess... My overall thing about Arrow Season 3 is that it starts off so good and it falls off, but I think I'm more disappointed in it because it could have been because you're again one they had a tall mountain to climb. Joke because they're coming off of Season 2, which is fucking amazing. So when you give me Ra's al Ghul, you promise me Ra's al Ghul, and you give me The Climb, which is again amazing episode. I'm like, okay, wherever you guys go here, you have potential to make this shit amazing. Mm-hmm. And they kind of falter. There's still good stuff in there where it's like, oh, that's not bad, you know. It's just where it ends up, it's like, oh, this is what you came up with? Compared to what we came up with Deathstroke and Malcolm Merlyn in Season 1, it's just like with a character of Ra's al Ghul who, by canonical history, is 10 times more important than Deathstroke or Merlin. It just feels like it falls short. And I think that's why I always look at Season 3 like, damn it, this pisses me off more. Like Matrix Reloaded. I always say Matrix Reloaded because Matrix Reloaded to me was great up until after Neo pulls the bullet out of Trinity, the movie just shoop, right off a fucking cliff. The whole series is shoop. Doesn't make it because the motorcycle shit's awesome. All the shit in the beginning is great. Just as soon as he pulls the bullet out of her, it's like, ah, all right. Now we're in fucking weird land and shit. So, yeah, I think Arrow Season 3, it's not the worst season of television ever. It's just, it could have been great. And they fumbled the football, essentially, at the goal line.
Yeah, for the DC CW shows, it is the worst season out of them all. I will fight anybody on that. Anyone says, "Oh, but Legends Season 1 is worse." No, it's not. It only had Supergirl 16
season
episodes.
Season 1 was pretty. Yeah, well, that was CBS. Maybe we won't count that because that's CBS.
Yeah, that's one. CBS Season 1. It's not really, not really countable. So I got to do a bit of math here, folks. I'm not sure if I can do this, but. Why don't you go on and say, like, what you're expecting for Season 4 from Arrow, if you're expecting anything?
I mean, you mean the next season's coming up?
Yeah, for Arrow.
Season, is it 4 or is season it 6?
No, right now, for while we're in the show, Season 4, after Season 3.
So, what was I expecting after Season 3 ended? Is that
yes.
The way they ended it with Arrow retiring, I'm like, well, something's going to have to pull him back. And I mean, you know me, at this point, I'm like, maybe it's Deathstroke again. Because we had that great episode where they go back to the island and Deathstroke's there and it's him and Thea or whatnot. I love that stuff. I was kind of going through my mind of where they were going to go with Arrow that I remember from the comic books in terms of villains. Because once you go, you give me Raish, and you give me Deathstroke, and you give me Merlin, I'm like, who the hell else is there, really? And now we're dealing with Ricardo Diaz in the more recent seasons, and it's like, who the fuck is Ricardo?
Exactly,
so I think they're running out of kind of things to take him. I think they're going to use this season coming up is going to be the Supermax plot that was going to be a movie a long time ago. But when I was finished watching season three, I'm like, somebody big is going to have to come to, you know, fix this. Little did I know, I guess it was going to be this spinning wheel of the non-Tapar Bot, you know, stuff over and over again. I guess trying to fix their mistake. And I go, as soon as you get away from that, the better. Stay away from that. Come up with you guys need a thinker. As you brought up with the Flash, where you're kind of you said speedster, thinker is what you got.
Yeah.
I guess Ricardo Diaz is supposed to be their thinker, but honestly, it's not that great.
Yeah, no, it isn't. Because what I wanted to happen was I wanted Mr. Finch to kill Ricardo. I wanted Mr. Finch to be the villain.
Oh.
From Person of Interest, because Michael Emerson is...
Right.
So, doing the math that I've done, The Flash Season 5 coming up this October.
Yes.
The 8th episode of The Flash Season 5 will be the 100th episode of Flash overall.
Okay.
I don't know what the hell they're doing with it. I have no clue. I have not seen any
more singing.
Articles.
Smooth Criminals. It's gonna happen.
Come on. Tom Cavanaugh and Danielle Panabaker will direct the 8th and 18th episodes of the season, respectively.
Mm.
Also, in my personal opinion, nowadays, not so much for his early stuff, but nowadays, that hack Kevin Smith will also direct an episode of The Flash Season 5. I'm sorry. When he directed his episode of Supergirl, and they called it Supergirl Lives, that's great. It's a nice little nod to something he didn't get to do with Superman Lives.
Right.
But that episode, and we'll get to that down the line, but that episode of Supergirl was just so he could get his daughter a job, in my personal opinion.
Here's the thing about, from what I've gathered from television to movies, and Kevin Smith has talked about this on his podcast, when you're directing a television show, you don't do anything, really. I mean, this is what he was saying. He says that show, those shows, according to Smith, kind of run themselves. I would be more interested if Kevin Smith wrote an episode over directed an episode. Because if he writes an episode, then I could see them going, taking weird chances. But if he's not writing the script, you're not going to really get a lot of Kevin Smith-isms. I think in the most recent season, he directed for The Flash, the most you guys, Jay and Silent Bob make a cameo. But that's about as Kevin Smithy as you're getting. The scripts are already pre-written. If he was writing, when you get these people coming over to direct stuff, like I remember Quentin Tarantino a long time ago directed an episode of ER. You can't effing tell, because I don't think he wrote it. Because these television shows, the people who have the power in television are showrunners. Greg Berlanti has the power. He's the director of the show, essentially, in movie terms.
Absolutely, but you look at the last 20, 25 some odd years, however long it's been since Clerks.
Right.
The guy has, deservedly so, just superstar fandom, superstar famous, all that's, you know, he's a director superstar. He's a superstar geek, you know, between Comic Book Man and Fat Man on Batman and everything else. And I used to absolutely love Kevin Smith's stuff. And I like some of the stuff he still does. But it's like the flashbacks from Arrow Season 1 and Arrow Season 3. I'm fucking over it. I am so over Kevin Smith right now. I've been over him for the last 5 years at this point. I don't know. But anyway.
I think, for Kevin Smith, I think I'm interested in more of his takes in terms of writing, his style in terms of directing. I guess Red State would be the anomaly, because I hear that's actually pretty good. You would get more of a flavor of Kevin Smith. But I've seen all the episodes that Kevin Smith directed. If I didn't tell you, you would never, and I got rid of the Jay and Silent Bob cameos, you'd never know. There's nothing, even to Kevin Smith's style, of as a director that you would know. But if Kevin Smith wrote an episode, I guarantee you would know, because the comic book he wrote, the he made him and Alex Ross did the covers of 1966 Batman comic book stuff. And when he did Onomatopoeia, who was played by first season of Arrow, the guy who played Gunn and Buffy, he plays a character, I forget his name.
That's, J. August Richards is the actor.
His character is supposedly based off a character that Kevin Smith came up with called Onomatopoeia in the Arrow comic book.
Okay.
Who he speaks all of his things that he's doing. So if he fires a gun, he goes bang, stuff like that. So, but that's, you would get interesting stuff like that in Kevin Smith if he was writing it. But when he comes to directing, it doesn't even matter. I could direct these, according to Kevin Smith, we could go on the set and direct these things. He says, essentially, I just give him notes like, why don't you try and do it this way? And that's it. When it comes to movies, yes, the director has a lot of power, but in TV, they don't do nothing. So if it's a Kevin Smith directed episode, you're never going to tell unless Kevin Smith shows up and goes, hey, I'm Silent Bob. I also directed this episode.
Yeah. And not that anyone actually listens to this podcast, but I do have to correct you. Mm. Gunn is an angel, not Buffy.
Gunn, Oh, yeah, right. I'm sorry. The Buffyverse.
The Buffyverse, yes. Buffyverse.
My apologies. I was going to say Deathlock, but nobody watches Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. So.
Agents of shit. What are you talking about? and I do remember him, because I've only seen the first season, like the first seven episodes of the first season of Agents of Shit. So I just can't.
But in Inhumans. Continue.
Where can the people find you online, sir?
Trying to be DJV. You can also find all the stuff that we do on simplicityreviews.net. You can search Simplicity Reviews on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, YouTube, all that good stuff.
Awesome. I am at TFU and Mike on Twitter. Follow at Geekcast Radio on Twitter. Check out Remote Control on Facebook, as well as Geekcast Radio Network. As always, go to geekcastradio.com. We have a new website coming. I don't know exactly when, but it's being worked on as we speak. Join us next time for The Flash Season 2 and Arrow Season 4. I honestly don't know who I'm having as a co-host for that episode, because DJ has almost ripped up his contract, because he's like, ew, I don't want to be on the later ones.
Where's my own show? I'm holding you ransom. This is blackmail of the highest order.
Okay, Donnie Wahlberg.
I'm Donnie Wahlberg. And it's wait, what?
Keep fighting over the remote control, folks. We'll catch you next time here on Remote Control.
Donnie Wahlberg? What?
See, I recast you as a white guy.
I got whitewashed by Donnie Wahlberg. Come on.
I could have said Lieutenant Dan.
Lieutenant Dan?
Oh, God. So funny.
On the Simplistic Reviews podcast, we talk movies. We talk TV. We talk...
Hello, Julie, what the heck are you doing?
Trying to make our spot sound more exciting by adding explosions.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure you could have got the point across with sound effects, not the real thing.
Download the show on iTunes or at simplisticreviews.blogspot.com.
I'm sure your insurance company will cover that.
No, they won't.
No, they probably won't.
Yeah, nope, that's not gonna happen.
Guys, he's in the corridor.
Gideon, could you just, like, not tell him that we were here?
Of course. I will accept any command given to me by you.
Barry!
Come on, we gotta get out of here.
Wait. Why? Would you accept my commands?
Because... you created me.
You've been tuned in to Remote Control, the Geekcast Radio Network's modern TV podcast. Join TFGO and Mike and the rest of the RCTV crew next time for a new modern TV topic. I'm your announcer, Optimus Solo, and remember to think of us the next time you pick up the remote controller.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Keep your family safe with help from Menards. From smoke and carbon monoxide detectors to fire extinguishers and more, Kidde home safety products keep your family protected in case of emergencies. Kidde detectors feature enhanced sensing technology that reduces false alarms and give fast alerts for more time to get out safely. Check out all our Kidde safety products and check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening now.
Safety.